This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, Tick Maynard will be back to talk about desensitization and sensitization in his series on equine behavior. But first of all, we're going to hear from Marilyn Payne and then Robin Walker about the recent symposium for the Young Event Horse and Future Event Horse. First of all, Marilyn joins us. Marilyn, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, here we are again, a continuation really of our conversations about this program, but I want to speak specifically about the symposium that recently took place. And if you could start by giving us an overview of what that program looked like for the Young Event Horse.
Well, actually, we have had this every year for the past few years, and this was by far the best symposium we have had to date. It was terrific because we had the morning sessions were at the Ocala Jockey Club, which is a fabulous facility. I mean, it's just gorgeous. We were in a building, it's like hexagonal, and it's all wood. It's all wood with a big cathedral feeling, and it had enough room for, I mean, we probably had 90 people in the room, and very comfortable seating, and it was all glass, so you're looking out on the property where the event is going to be held in November. So it was terrific, and we really appreciate that they allowed us to be there. Richard Trafford invited us to be there, and it was just by far the best facility we've ever had to date.
And talk about the program then that you had scheduled for those that were then not present.
We always invite a foreign expert, and this year we invited Kai Stefan Meyer, who is a top German rider. He's been on the German team. He's competed in many 3- and 4-star events successfully, and he actually grew up on a farm with his parents breeding horses, so it's in his blood, and he's been riding young horses his whole life. And now he has a facility of his own with his wife where they breed and train young horses as well as their competition horses. So he definitely was a top expert for us to have, and great to have the German view, because we all know that the Germans are top in the sport, so we'd like to know their secrets.
Did he share any secrets, Marilyn?
Oh, he did. He was very good. And what we did the first day, which was Tuesday for us, we had Kai. He spoke for a long time about developing 4- and 5-year-olds and how he brings them along and how he starts his horses as 3-year-olds and very slowly brings them along through the 4-year-old year into the 5-year-old year. And it was just great to see how he did everything very slowly, very methodically, and gave the horses, the young horses, lots and lots of breaks. He would train them for a few weeks, and then he'd give them time off, several weeks off, and then he'd pick it up again and then give them several weeks off. And he did this mostly because he believes in it, that you shouldn't keep stressing a young horse, but also it worked well with his competition schedule. So when he was riding horses and getting ready for badminton or burley or some of the top championships, that's when he gave them time off. But it worked great for him. So it was really nice to see.
And then what did you do after that session?
So afterwards, we then had, we had a vet talk. We had Dan Marks, who's a terrific vet. He's been around forever. And he's been in the hunters, the jumpers, the dressage horses, the race horses, steeplechase horses. He's dealt with just about everything, and he's one of the top vets worldwide that people really respect. So he talked to us about how conformation affects the way the horse moves and explained in detail how horses jump and what muscles they use and how the conformation affects how well they jump, and So it was very informative. It was great to listen to confirmation from a different point of view, not just, you know, the basics that you always hear, but this was more form to function. Mm-hmm. So that was great. And what else did we do? After we had a great lunch, we then went to Longwood Farm, which was the best part of it, I think, of all, because we always have outside demonstrations in the afternoon. We have horses and riders come, young horses and riders, and watch them go and talk about how they move and what we think about, you know, their performance and how they can improve their performance. But this one, we first started with horses on the flat and talked about how they moved and evaluated their walk, trot, and canter and what could be better and what you could make better and what you couldn't. You know, some horses, you have certain criteria that you just can't change, and other ways you can really develop them. So it was really good because we had Kai talking about what he thought of all these horses and if he was picking these horses out to be a top horse and telling us what he thought the good and weak points of these horses were, but what these riders could do to make it better. And after we did the flat work, then we went to jumping. And that was really exciting because we had the horses jumping and he talked about what he saw in their jumping, what was good and what needed to be improved. But the best part was that he and Leslie Law both got on horses. We had four horses come that were not ridden by anybody else. They just got on cold. These were young horses that two horses had just been imported from Europe. And one was a thoroughbred off the track. So they were very, very green horses. And it was fabulous to see Kai and Leslie get on these horses. And you could tell how green these horses were and how wiggly and how, you know, confused they were at first and how worried they were about the surroundings. And within a few minutes, they transformed these horses. And you would never know it was the same horse from the beginning to the end when they got done riding them. But they both had headsets on. So as they went along, they were telling everyone what they felt and what they were doing to improve it. And it was just wonderful. It was just wonderful. And we had a big PA system, so all the spectators could hear exactly what they were doing, what they were thinking, and then see this evolve right in front of their eyes. So it was absolutely terrific.
Yeah, that really sounds very, very informative. What kind of response did you get from the audience and the feedback then, Marilyn? What kind of questions came out of that?
There weren't a lot of questions because all their questions were answered. There were very few questions because they were so clear in what they were doing and why they were doing it. And then Leslie also brought a 3-star horse of his, and he rode that, jumped it a little bit, but mostly he galloped it to show us what a really good gallop is, and the horse was fabulous. And so it was good for people to see it. You hear about what's good and what's not good, but to actually see this horse, even though he was more mature, you want to see what you're looking for in the future. So that was a real treat to have him there too.
Well, it sounds like obviously a very productive session there. What were your biggest takeaways, Marilyn, from that you will help in advancing this program as it matures?
I think what we really saw was that people want to learn. They want to learn how to bring their horses along. And this was the perspective that we used for the whole thing. One thing I didn't mention was that I also spoke about what the judges are looking for and how the riders can best prepare the horses for these competitions. So in order to bring the best out in the horses, exactly how the judges dealing with what they see in front of them and what the rider can do to gain points. So there we had a big question and answer period. But it was for the dressage test, but also for the jumping and the gallop of how to best show your horse off, because we have comments all the time from the championship judges that we bring in, and they say, geez, I really like that horse, and I think it would go a lot better. I wish they had ridden it more forward or ridden, you know, ridden it differently in dressage. So many times in dressage, people try to think, oh, it's a dressage test, and they hold them together too much and try and make it perfect instead of showing the horse off and just letting him go freely forward and really show off what the horse has, what his potential is. Mm-hmm. Because we don't take off for silly things. You know, the horse shies or gets inattentive or, you know, loses his concentration because that's a young horse. But sure. What we really want to see is what their true gaits are and what their jumping ability is. So that was really terrific. So I think we're going to keep going on with that, keep trying to get more riders coming in, but also have our experts ride the horses, because I think that was the absolute best to show that and have the feedback from that. I think that was the biggest hit of the whole thing. So we're definitely going to try and do that again in the future.
Right. Well, lots to look forward to then as you carry forward this program. Marilyn, I want to thank you for coming on the show this week and sharing an update with us. Anything else that you'd like to add before we let you go?
Just to let you know that on Wednesday, we stayed one more day and we invited all the judges. The future event horse judges and younger event horse judges came, and we spent the whole morning, actually we spent the whole day at the Jockey Club because a big rainstorm came through with high winds and thunderstorms. So we stayed at the Jockey Club, and it was terrific because we had lots and lots of videos, and we still had Dan Marks there as the vet to talk about the confirmation of these horses that we were scoring, which was really terrific to see his take on it and what he thought was a deal breaker as far as buying a horse where you're risking that they're not going to stay sound. But then we watched dressage tests, we watched jumping, we watched galloping, so we could play it over and over, and Kai was there to talk about what he saw and what he thought was really good about these horses. And then in the afternoon, we actually, all the judges actually did practice judging, and we judged confirmation from slides, and we judged the dressage and jumping and gallop from videos, and these were great videos that RNS Video had given us that they had done at the championships in the fall. So that was a real bonus, because not only did we have that, but we also had the score sheets, so we knew exactly what the judges there had said and the reasons. So it was very educational for them. So just want to let you know we're continuing to get our judges better, because without good judges, the program isn't going to work either. So,
all right. Well, great. moving forwards all the time with this program then, Marilyn. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, you're welcome.
Robin Walker joins us again to talk about the recent symposium in which he was involved with the FEH, the Future Event Horse, in Longwood, near Ocala in Florida. Robin, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, obviously a continuation of our previous conversations, this is about the symposiums and what is developing in the FEH program. You were responsible for like confirmation and handling the free schooling, that sort of thing. So where would you like to begin to summarize this, Robin?
Well, we started with our day was Monday. We started with a classroom session. Dr. Spurlock came and did a very informative practical veterinary talk relating to the young horses and the real young horses, the foals and the first few months of life and what you can and can't do, and I thought that was very helpful for people to be able to have somebody of that kind of experience be able to start to talk about what you're looking at and why and how, you know, you can possibly keep an eye on things as they're born and they start to grow, so you don't get into trouble later on. Tremendous amount of mileage and experience there, so that was very, very informative and useful. And then we had the video for the introduction of the free jumping, which is going to happen this year on both coasts. So we ran through that, and it's available to everybody now on the USCA website. It's a very basic video that starts from the ground up and allows, I think it'll be a good reference for people to go back to so they know what to expect come the time of the finals in the fall. And then we ended up over at Longwood with Phil Silver, did a very good handling demonstration, and then we did Susan and I did a confirmation session for both for the judges and for the people who, you know, were there to watch. So we had judges who were scoring, and we did that in a round table type way. I always like to do it that way, rather than just tell people what I think we would do, you know, ask them the question and try and come to some agreement. So we're getting across the board experience in the situations that they're going to be in when they're out judging. So that was the meat of our day. I think it went very well overall. Nice balance of horses in the afternoon, different types. Phil did a great job with a good practical demonstration of what you should and shouldn't be doing with your horses and how to do it. And the jump shoot video is now out there, and I think Dr. Spurlock did a great job. And there was a lot to be learned from her presentation in particular.
Talk a little bit more about that video, you know, because we really need our wider membership to know about this, Robin, and what it comprises, if you could just talk us through it.
Well, we need to get... it became very obvious last year after we judged the finals that it was a good job that we did the test class, meaning we had the jump shoot set up, we had people who volunteered to come and bring their horses through the format that will be compulsory this year. And it was clear that we have some work to do there with getting people up to speed and in terms of how to do the homework at home, how to think about getting their horses ready in a safe environment and how to get experience with that. So rather than go around and do loads of seminars, we decided it'd be a good idea to have just a basic video that started from scratch and that people could look at and go back to as a reference point. So basically, the jump shoot was set up. We filmed it last July over at Lochmoy, and the jump shoot set up with the poles. The distances are all talked about. There's a range of distances there. You'll see the maximum heights and, you know, basically just over and over again of how to start and where to go and different horses and different circumstances that you find yourself in. Because I think that's, you know, we want to be producing a program here where we get to look at the three-year-olds. I'm glad it's starting, because before we were just an in-hand class, you never really know what they're like. Now we'll get to see them over fences. Peter Gray and I judged that test class last year, and it was a good job that we did that, because it showed me, anyway, the amount of work that people need to be doing before they can come into that environment, just like a competition, and be able to act now and have a plan and know what they're doing, just like when you go out competing. Know what your horse can do, know what your horse can't do, a bit of experience done at home, and be able to execute something that people can judge. So the reason that video was made is to give people a place to start from ground zero, and above all else is to let them know what to expect when they turn up. So, you know, as a committee, we don't want anybody turning up saying we didn't know what to expect, we didn't know how to get ready. So that was the main reason that video was done. So it's there as a tool for everybody to look at.
Right, so we develop a standard here. Give us an idea of the kind of feedback that you got from the symposium this time, Robin. Was there anything new and different to you? I know you've been doing this a long time now, but give us an idea of what kind of response you had from the people that attended.
Well, I think it's getting, you know, we're getting tighter as an FEH committee. We're a fairly dynamic bunch, and you know, we want to present something that is tight and well organized. Susan's a fantastic co-chair. She's disciplined, organized, and focused, and she's always 6 months ahead of what we're doing. And so, to me, it was this time. Last year was a huge deal because it was the first time that, you know, we set the jump shoot up and all that. Now it feels we got the video made, and now it feels like we're starting to get traction and get some and get wheels rolling. We've got several breeders who are realizing that they now will be transferring from breeding into owning horses that are being ridden later on. Tremendous amount of interest in how to get the horses jumping and where that takes them. There just seemed to be, not a sense of relief, that's the wrong word, but finally we're here, and this is where we're going, if you know what I mean. So it felt more normal to me this year. We were running the confirmation bit that Dr. Spurlock did was great, because it wasn't just the PowerPoint we'd done in the past. It was more in depth and more practical. Not that that wasn't practical, but this is the real life from her presentation, which was great, because we all look at things in the field and go, I wonder when them legs are going to get better, or is there anything I can do about that, or boy, that looks really good, or that doesn't look good. So that was great. The handling, we can't do enough handling. We can't do enough handling demonstrations, because in our jumping, in our test class in last fall, there were a couple of horses that turned up there that needed handling, is the politically correct way to describe what was going on. They needed some handling, and I think people can't have enough of that, and realize that their horses are going to come into a situation where there's going to be pressure. They're not going to have seen things, that it's going to be atmosphere. And, you know, for some horses, that's easy to take. For some, it's not. The more you handle them, the easier they're going to be able to tolerate it. The more you get out, the more you get going. So I'm glad we're here, and the feedback was generally good. I haven't heard anything negative, so that usually means that everybody was okay.
So the program really is maturing. There's a much more robust platform,
yes,
is what I'm hearing you,
yeah,
say, Robin, about
very
this.
Very much so. Very much so. We're going to jump. I mean, we'll jump on both coasts this year. Like I say again, it was a good decision not to jump last year. I was a bit disappointed about that, to be honest. But I got some feedback saying that we needed to get more info. Okay, so now the info's out there. But if you have a three-year-old this year, you know, you won't be forced to jump, but you won't win the class if you don't jump. And I think it's high time we got to that point. So I'm happy to see us there.
Wonderful. Raising the bar as ever for our future event horse program. Robin, thank you so much indeed for coming back on the program and for, of course, being one of our hosts this year at the symposium in Ocala, Florida. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tick Maynard joins us again for a continuation of his series on equine behavior. This week he's going to be talking about sensitization and desensitization. Tick, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be back.
Well, it's an interesting series, and I think, you know, we're covering so many different aspects of equine behavior, but this one is obviously particularly important, isn't it, about desensitization itself with a horse in training.
Yeah, when we talk about sensitization and desensitization, a lot of people have a different idea about what that means, and even whether it's good or bad. And relating to our topic from last week, anthropomorphism, some people are even, you know, they even don't like the word desensitization. They prefer to talk about building the horse's trust in a situation, or having the horse respect you, or having the horse understand that, you know, whatever situation they're in, it's not going to hurt them. So different people already, before we even get into the minutiae of what it means, people already have their own ideas about this. So I find it a really interesting subject to talk about. And you're right, we do have a lot of different subjects that we're covering under animal behavior or horse behavior. And I'm wondering if any of the listeners out there have any questions about horse behavior, if there's a way for them to ask us that, is there?
There certainly is. They can email the office, absolutely, if they have any questions, and we'd be only too happy to take them back to you and continue this conversation, or they can post them on the Facebook page as well.
Yeah, that would be great to hear from somebody, yeah. So basically, sensitization and desensitization are two of the oldest learning things that any animal can do. And basically all animals do it. And with horses, you think about a wild horse, you know, or a horse in a paddock, or a horse in any situation, really. And those are the first two things it does. If something scares it, it runs away and becomes more sensitive to that. And usually the further the horse runs and the faster the horse runs, the more that fear is reinforced. And in terms of desensitization, if you think about a horse in a paddock next to an airport or something, every time a plane takes off, you know, at the beginning it might be pretty startled if it's never seen a plane before, but pretty soon, if you've ever seen horses in that situation or next to the highway, it's not like they're scared of every plane or every car. They get pretty used to that because those cars or those planes don't hurt the horse. And then, obviously, we take that idea and we apply it to our horse training, right? How the horse relates to us and to the competition world that we're in. And I think, ideally, we would take a horse and the horse would be desensitized to everything that we don't want it to care about. So you could take a horse in a parade in New York City and there'd be fireworks and kids screaming and banners and cars driving around and honking, and the horse would just walk quietly along and, you know, just not have a care in the world. Its head is low, it's licking and chewing. And then on the other hand, you just put your leg on and you get a beautiful walk to canter transition, and the horse is sensitized to your leg. It knows to react to that, and then the horse canters off in this beautiful, relaxed forward canter. And I've often said it doesn't take a genius to sensitize a horse, and it doesn't take a genius to desensitize a horse. It maybe takes a little bit of experience and timing, but really the art of it is knowing how to perfectly time your aids and your feeling with a horse so that the horse is sensitized to what you want and when you want, and the horse is desensitized to, you know, external stimuli that shouldn't matter in the moment. You know, if you're in a dressage test, you don't want the horse, you know, paying attention to the crowds. You want the horse with its ears, you know, to the side and floppy, and its eye, you know, looking ahead, but its body is constantly tuned in to what the rider is doing, to the slightest aid, to the tiniest aid. And if you like, Chris, we can talk a little bit about how I begin that process. Does that sound good?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, because the beginnings are critical, aren't they, in establishing that sensitization?
Yeah, right from the beginning, having the horse understand that there's going to be sort of a relationship with the people in its life. And so I always start that myself on the ground, doing groundwork. And the reason I started adopting that habit is after spending a few months, about 5 years ago, with David and Karen O'Connor, and watching how they started all the young horses. Lauren Bliss Kiefer was there, and she showed me a few things. And a lot of the O'Connor students, like Hannah C. Burnett and my wife, Sinead Halpin, you know, a lot of them have adopted this practice of starting young horses online, which is what we call the rope. With the rope halter, we call it a line. So we start the horses online. And right away, when I've got using the rope, or I've got a horseman stick, which is that, you know, that 4 foot stick with a soft string at the end, I call it a horseman stick. In the Pirelli program, they call it a carrot stick. There's, you know, there's different words for it. Right away, I start to have the horse start to figure out when he's supposed to react to things and when he's not supposed to react to things. And for the horse, you know, the more consistent I want the horse to be, obviously the more disciplined and consistent I have to be with myself, so they start to understand when I'm meaning something and when I don't. And often that's the hardest part for people. But I try to break it down into three parts. The first part, number one, is my intention. You know, my energy level, whether I'm facing or not, whether I'm relaxed or not, whether I'm offering a cue or not. And horses pick up on intention very, very easily. You know, in the wild, they say that a horse, it's not scared of predators. A horse is scared of things that act predatory, you know, things that are moving towards it, things that are stalking or moving quickly or running, things that are growing in size. You know, those are things that a horse is scared of. Often you can see a horse, you know, grazing with its herd, you know, a few hundred yards from a sleeping, you know, a sleeping predator or something like that, because that's not acting predatory. And it's the same thing with people. Horses are scared of people that act in a predatory fashion. And they're not scared of things that, you know, are, you know, a person moving away from them or a person moving slowly or just standing there. You know, as a general rule, often, you know, horses can learn to be afraid of those things if that's reinforced in some way, but that's sort of a different topic. So number one is my intention when I'm working with the horse. You know, do I have the stick in front of me? Do I have it up? Is the stick moving towards the horse? You know, that's just my general intention or energy. The second thing, Chris, is how I'm moving the stick, or how I'm moving the rope, or how I'm creating pressure. And there's sort of what some people call a drive line on the horse, which goes from approximately the withers to the front of the shoulder. And if you're creating pressure in front of that line, you're wanting the horse to slow down or go backwards. And if you're creating pressure behind that line, you're wanting the horse to speed up or go forwards. and pressure that is going to, you know, have the horse react, that the pressure that I'm going to use is going to be increasing. So if I'm using the stick, it's going to be increasing in speed or volume or frequency. You know, it's going to be getting bigger until the horse reacts, right? And on the other hand, if I'm wanting the horse to get used to something, you know, I'm going to move it, be moving that thing slowly. You know, I might use the back end of the stick and give the horse a little rub on the withers. I'm going to be using it in a nice way, maybe giving them a rub with it. If I'm using a string on the end of the horseman's stick, maybe I'll just stand next to the horse on a hot day where there's some flies buzzing around and just, you know, just swing that rope or that string over the horse's back and just keep the flies off him and just stand like that for 4 or 5 minutes. So I'm getting him used to stuff, not just so he accepts it, but ideally so that, you know, he even learns to like it. You know, same thing with some horses don't like being touched around the flanks, you know, or the nostrils or the muzzle or whatever it is. And horses, you know, for veterinary reasons as much as anything, should learn to be touched anywhere. And I will teach them so that they learn to accept it. But ideally, always what's in my mind is that not only are they going to accept it, but they're going to learn to like it. So just to backtrack so far, we've got one, my intention. Two, how I'm creating that energy and where it's going. Is the energy getting bigger? Is the energy staying the same? Is the energy getting smaller or softer? And how it's affecting the horse? And then the third thing, and I usually say this is the most important thing, although everything's important with horses. They pay attention to the smallest details. The third thing is the timing of the release. So if I'm creating some pressure in front of the horse and I'm wanting him to back up, and then he backs up, and then I release the pressure, I stop, maybe I turn slightly away from him, I relax my shoulders, and I take a 30-second break. Maybe he puts his head down, maybe he licks and chews, and all of a sudden, him backing away from the pressure is reinforced. On the other hand, if I'm creating pressure in front of the horse and I stop before he backs up, he's going to, instead of being sensitized to that stick or that pressure, he's going to be desensitized to it. So that's why the timing of the release is so important. And there's an old saying, which is pressure motivates, but the release of pressure teaches. And I love that because it applies not only to riding, but to everything from, you know, teaching a horse to back up, to trailer loading, to cross tying. You know, if you want a horse to go on the trailer and they, you know, you have maybe put a little pressure behind them or you pull on the rope in front of them, both of which create a little pressure or, you know, a little motivation for the horse because pressure motivates. And then they get on the trailer and then you release the pressure, maybe you give them a carrot, then all of a sudden that's reinforced. But on the other hand, if you're putting pressure on the horse and, you know, he turns his head and you're not paying attention and he closes the rope out of your hands and he runs half a mile back to the paddocks, you know, where his friends are at the back of the property. And especially if he runs far and he runs fast, then he's going to get to the paddock back there. The pressure is going to have come off of him because he's gotten away from you. He's back with his friends. And back there, he's going to put his head down and he's going to lick and he's going to chew. And all of a sudden that is going to be reinforced is tearing the rope out of your hands by turning his head to the outside. So if, you know, if there's one thing that maybe the listeners can take away from today, it's that pressure motivates, but the release of pressure teaches.
An important combination. You can't have one without the other. Good start to this, I think, in terms of introducing people to the very concept of it all. And would you take this further in terms of your training? I know this is just the start, Tick.
So, yeah, good question. This is just the start. No, ideally, once the horse starts to understand the concepts, that if there's pressure on them, if they try to figure out the answer, then the pressure goes away. Then you have a horse that's trying to, you know, some people say, trying to figure out the question or solve the riddle, or whatever it is. And a horse becomes more thoughtful rather than simply reactive. And, you know, you're taking away, or you're not taking away, you're changing, you're molding the horse's natural behavior from being reactive and simply wanting to run away to a horse being more thoughtful and more patient and more interested and more curious, all things that you want to bring out in a horse. You know, even playfulness, you know, that engagement with the world, those are things that we want to bring out in a horse that's having to live, you know, with humans in a human world and go to competitions and compete in dressage or show jumping or eventing or any discipline, really. And that concept of pressure motivates, but the release of pressure teaches, also applies to when you're riding. You know, you put your leg on. When the horse goes forward, you take your leg off. You know, it's that release of pressure that's really what's going to encourage the horse to go forward the next time, right? It's where that learning happens. the pressure may motivate the horse, but it's the release of pressure where the teaching happens, where the learning happens, where the improvement in their ability to react to the ace in a thoughtful way happens.
Very good lesson there, Tick. Thank you very much indeed for coming back on the program and sharing your wisdom, your thoughts on this series of equine behavior. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, and I look forward to hearing some questions from some of our listeners. Thanks very much for having me.
And that's it for this week's program. As Tick said, you can post any comments or questions about this series on equine behavior on our Facebook page or email us here at the office at US Eventing. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.